You know that feeling, right? It's a very specific type of anxiety. You've done all the reading, you've watched the YouTube videos, you've listened to us, ramble on for hours about the theory, and you have the app open on your phone. Your thumb is literally hovering over the buy button, and you just freeze.
Ah, yes. The classic analysis paralysis,
Yeah.
or honestly, just good old-fashioned rational financial fear.
It is fear. It's that moment where the rubber finally meets the road. All that abstract reading suddenly becomes very real because money is about to leave your bank
It
account.
feels final.
It feels irrevocable. And let's be honest, looking at the source material we're covering today, it seems like the industry almost designs these interfaces to be intimidating.
They certainly can be. It's a lot of flashing lights and numbers. But, usually that anxiety just comes from a lack of a mental model.
Okay.
It's a big step to go from being an observer to a participant. But what if I told you that you've probably done something functionally identical to this process before, maybe at an airport kiosk?
I assume you're not talking about me overpaying for a stale ham sandwich and a bottle of water.
I am not. I'm talking about the currency exchange booth, the bureau de change.
Okay, let's unpack this because that is the core analogy in the research we're looking at today. How does a trip to Japan relate to buying Bitcoin?
It's the single best way to lower the temperature on that anxiety.
Yeah.
Buying cryptocurrency is, at its fundamental level, just like buying foreign currency for a vacation.
Right.
If you were going to Japan, what would you do?
Well, I'd walk up to the booth and check the exchange rate. How many yen do I get for my dollar? Probably complain about the fees, hand over my cash, and get the yen back.
Right. You aren't buying a product. You aren't buying a stock in a
Yeah.
company. You are swapping one form of stored value for another.
So it's a swap, not a purchase.
Precisely. And that is the exact same flow as buying Bitcoin. You
Right.
check the price, how many satoshis for my dollar. You check the transaction fee. You exchange the fiat currency for the digital asset. It isn't magic. It's just a swap.
That does make it feel a little less like I'm hacking into a mainframe and more like I'm just, preparing for a trip. But here's the thing. When I go to the currency booth, I just hand them cash. It takes 10 seconds. When I'm on these exchanges, getting the money to them seems to be half the battle. The sources paint this picture of a setup phase that feels more like applying for a mortgage than buying a coffee.
And that is where the mission of today's deep dive comes in. We aren't just going to talk about buying crypto in the abstract.
Okay.
We are going to walk through that specific, 20 to 25 minute process of the first purchase. We're going to dissect the hidden costs of convenience, which can be massive. And we're going to look at the golden rules of safety that our sources really emphasize.
So let's start with phase one, the setup. The sources assume we've already picked an exchange like a Coinbase or a Kraken and verified who we are.
Right.
So the app knows I'm me. I've sent them my driver's license. I've done the awkward selfie check. Now I need to give them money.
Correct. You need to choose your on-ramp or your payment vehicle. And this is really a story of speed versus cost.
I feel like that's the story of modern life. I always want speed, but I hate the cost.
In the crypto world, that impatience is expensive. The course material outlines three main ways to pay. First, you have the bank transfer, often called ACH in the US.
This is labeled in the text as the slow and steady option. Why?
Because it relies on the traditional banking rails, which are notoriously clunky, connects directly to your bank account. The fees are generally the lowest, sometimes even zero, depending on the platform. But the catch is the timing.
Uh-oh.
It can take anywhere from 1 to 5 business days to fully clear and settle.
5 days. In crypto time, that's like a decade. The price could double or crash in 5 days. If I see a dip I want to buy, I can't wait until next Tuesday.
And that is exactly the psychological trigger the exchanges rely on. People want to buy now. They see the price moving, FOMO kicks in, and they skip the bank transfer.
So they look at option two,
They look at option two,
a debit card.
the middle ground. It is. It's instant. You get your assets immediately available to trade. But you're looking at moderate fees, usually around 1 to 2%, simply for the privilege of using the card network.
That doesn't sound too bad until you realize you're starting your investment at a 2% loss immediately.
Yeah, exactly.
If I buy $100, I only actually get $98 worth of Bitcoin. I have to
Yeah.
make a 2% profit just to break even.
Exactly. You're digging a hole before you've even started. But then we have the third option, which the sources basically label the danger zone, the credit card.
But this is where I get confused. It's so easy. It's instant. I get points or miles. Why is it dangerous? Is it just the fees?
It's the fees, but it's also how the bank views the transaction. This is a crucial insight that most people miss. First, the exchange fee is the highest, typically 2-4%. But the real danger is that your credit card issuer will likely not treat this as a purchase. They treat it as a cash advance.
Oh, wait. That is a massive distinction.
It's huge. A normal purchase has a grace period. You pay it off at the end of the month, zero interest. A cash advance usually has no grace period.
So interest starts right away.
The second the transaction goes through, often at a much higher rate than your normal APR.
Oh.
Plus, there's usually a flat cash advance fee of maybe $10 or 5%.
So let's run the math on that. If I use a credit card, I pay the exchange 4%, I pay my bank 5%, plus immediate interest, I could be down 10 or 12% before the market even moves.
Easily. And remember, crypto is volatile. If the market drops 10% the next day, which happens all the time, and you're already down 10% on fees, you've lost 20% of your capital in 24 hours.
That's a disaster for a first-time buyer.
It's a total disaster.
Okay, so the clear takeaway here is if I can be patient, use the bank transfer. If I absolutely must have it now, debit is okay, but avoid the credit card unless I hate having money.
That's a fair summary. Planning ahead saves you significantly.
So let's say I've been responsible. I connected my bank account. I waited my couple of days. The money is there. I'm staring at the screen. I see a big, beautiful, glowing button that says buy. I should click it, right?
Yep, you would think so. But this brings us to one of the most fascinating parts of the source material, the battle between the buy button and the trade screen,
Okay.
or as I like to call it, the convenience tax.
A convenience tax. That sounds like something I pay at a concert for a bottle of water.
It's very similar. The sources lay out a specific scenario. Let's call it the $50 scenario. You have $50 to invest.
Okay, 50 bucks. Low stakes. I like it.
You have two options. Option A is that simple buy button you just mentioned. It's designed to be frictionless.
Yeah.
One click, it says buy Bitcoin. You have your $50, done.
I love option A. It's clean, it's easy. I don't have to think.
Of course you do. User interface designers spend millions making sure you love option A. But option A executes what's called a market order with a hefty convenience fee. In the example provided, that fee is around 2.5-3%.
So on my $50 purchase, I might pay what, $1.50?
$1.50 in fees,
I mean, playing devil's advocate here, it's $1.50. It's not the end of the world. Why should I stress over pocket change?
On $50, sure, it's the price of a candy bar.
All right.
But let's look at option B. You navigate to the Advanced or Pro tab. Now, be honest, what does that screen look like to you?
It looks like the cockpit of an alien spaceship. It's got red and green candles, numbers flashing, scrolling lists of orders. It's intimidating. It looks like something you need a license to operate.
And that fear is expensive. Because if you use that screen to place a limit order, the fee is typically 0.5% or less.
So on our $50 purchase, instead of $1.50, I'm paying what, 25 cents?
Roughly, yes. You are paying 5 to 6 times the fee for option A.
Okay, let's unpack this. We are paying a 500% markup on the fee just to avoid looking at a scary chart.
Essentially, yes.
Yes.
You are paying a premium for a simplified user interface. And sure, on $50, the difference is a dollar. But imagine if you get into this. Imagine you invest $1,000 or $10,000 over a year.
The difference adds up.
The difference between paying $50 in fees versus $300 in fees,
Yeah.
it eats into your compounding returns significantly.
That's actually a really good point. It's like the difference between buying pre-cut fruit at the supermarket versus buying the whole melon.
Exactly.
You pay a huge markup for the convenience of not using a knife. But you mentioned something technical there, market order versus limit order. I think we need to define those because the advanced screen is useless if I don't know what the buttons do.
Great call. Let's strip away the jargon. The simple buy button is a market order. You are telling the exchange, I want Bitcoin right now, and I don't care exactly what the price is, just give it to me.
You're a taker.
You are a taker. You take whatever price is currently available. So if the price spikes in the split second you click, you pay the higher price. You prioritize speed over price.
And the limit order.
A limit order is you saying, I want to buy Bitcoin, but I am only willing to pay X amount for it. You set the price. It's like making an offer on a house. You say, I'll pay $300,000. If the seller wants $310,000, no deal happens.
So it just sits there.
Your order sits there on the order book until someone is willing to meet your price. It requires a little more patience.
And you're a maker in that case.
Yes, You are a maker. You're making an offer to the market. And because exchanges like it, when you add liquidity to their books, the fees for makers are often even lower than for takers.
So the advanced screen isn't just cheaper because it's ugly. It's cheaper because you're actually giving the exchange more control over the price you pay, and you're adding stability to their market.
Exactly. Learning to navigate that advanced tab is probably the single best financial lesson you can learn early on. It saves you money on every single transaction forever.
Okay, I'm sold. I'm going to brave the advanced tab. I'm going to save my fees. Now, the big question, what am I actually buying? Because I scroll through these lists and I see thousands of coins. There's Bitcoin, Ethereum, and then a whole zoo of dog coins, food coins, coins named after memes.
The menu problem. And the source material is very clear on this for beginners. Ignore the noise. Stick to the established players.
Which sounds boring. Everyone wants to find the next Bitcoin, right? We want that lottery ticket.
They do. But for your first purchase, which is what we are discussing, you need stability. The sources point to Bitcoin, BTC, and Ethereum, ETH.
Why those two specifically?
It's track record and liquidity. They have the longest history, the most developers working on them, and they aren't likely to, you know, vanish overnight.
Yeah.
The source warns specifically against buying random cryptocurrencies just because they look cheap.
But that's the temptation, isn't it? This is a huge psychological trap. I look at Bitcoin and it's, what, $90,000 a coin? I don't have 90 grand. But cheap coins only 10 cents.
Mm-hmm.
I can buy thousands of them. I feel richer owning 10,000 units of something than 0.0001 of something.
This is called unit bias. It is a cognitive flaw in how we perceive value. We prefer whole numbers. We prefer more items. But in investing, it's a fallacy.
Right, because if I have $100 of Bitcoin and $100 of cheap coin, I have $100.
Exactly. If Bitcoin goes up 10%, your 100 becomes 110. If cheap coin goes up 10%, your 100 becomes 110. It doesn't matter that you own fractions of a Bitcoin.
So we need to get comfortable with fractional shares.
Yes. You can enter a fiat amount, say I want to spend $50, or a crypto amount like I want 0.0002 BTC. The math works the same. Don't let the desire to own a whole coin drive you into risky assets that could go to zero.
Speaking of going to zero, that leads us to the most important bolded text in the entire source material, the golden rule of crypto investing.
Only invest what you can afford to lose entirely.
They don't sugarcoat it, do they? Lose entirely. Not lose a little bit, not market correction.
No, and they shouldn't. The volatility here is real. The text mentions that prices can drop 50% in weeks. If you look at history, Bitcoin has had multiple crashes of 70 or 80%.
So how do I know if I can afford to lose it? Is there like a test?
They suggest the bill test or the emergency fund test. If the money you are using is needed for rent next month, do not invest it. If it's part of your emergency savings for a flat tire or a medical bill, do not invest it.
Because if the market crashes the day before rent is due, you're in serious trouble.
Exactly. You never want to be a forced seller. You want to be able to ride out the dips. If you need that cash next week, you don't have the luxury of waiting for the market to recover.
I really like the concept of the learning budget that the source brings up. It reframes the whole first purchase. Can you explain that?
This is a great mental shift. Instead of thinking I'm becoming an investor with a capital I, think of your first $10 to $50 as tuition.
Tuition for what?
Tuition for the University of Crypto. You are spending that money to understand the interface, to feel the emotions of the price moving, to understand the fees.
So if I lose that $50 because I mess up a transfer or the market crashes, it wasn't a loss, it was the cost of education.
Precisely. It takes the pressure off. You're not trying to get rich on this first $50. You're just trying to graduate from crypto kindergarten. Start very small. Even $10 is enough to go through the motions.
Okay, so I've set my learning budget. I've picked Bitcoin. I'm using the advanced screen to save on fees. I'm feeling good. I click the button to confirm the order. Is the price I see on the screen exactly what I get?
Here is where it gets really interesting and where we get into the hidden mechanics.
Yeah.
The answer is not always.
Why not? If the screen says $50,000, why don't I get it at $50,000?
There are three forces at play here that the source details. First is market movement. Prices shift in milliseconds. Between the time you view the price and the time your click reaches the server, the price might have jumped up or down.
Okay, that makes sense. It's a live market, like the stock floor.
Second is the spread. This is often invisible to the user, especially on those simple buy screens. It is the difference between the buy price and the sell price. It's how exchanges and market makers ensure profit.
So they always buy slightly lower and sell slightly higher.
You always buy slightly higher than the market rate and sell slightly lower. So if Bitcoin is trading at $50,000, the exchange might charge you $50,100.
And that $100 difference is the spread, a hidden cost.
Exactly. And the third force is slippage. Now, this is less relevant for our $50 buyer, but it's good to know. If you were trying to buy, say, $10 million worth of Bitcoin, your order is so big that it actually eats up all the cheap Bitcoin available and starts buying the more expensive ones.
You're so rich, you make the price go up just by shopping.
That's the whale problem. But for the beginner, just be aware of the spread. It means you are technically down on your investment the second you buy because you bought at the ask price and can only sell at the bid price.
So we've navigated the treacherous waters. The transaction's complete. I see the numbers in my account. I officially own crypto. Now what?
The after phase. The source material outlines three main paths. You can hold, withdraw, or trade.
Hold seems the easiest. Just leave it there.
It is the easiest. You leave it on the exchange. It's convenient. If you lose your password, the exchange can usually help you recover it. But
there's always a but in crypto.
It's less secure. As the famous saying goes, not your keys, not your coins. If the exchange goes bankrupt, which we have seen happen with major players, or gets hacked, your money is at risk.
You're an unsecured creditor.
You are. So the alternative is withdrawal to a self-custody wallet. This is where you move the crypto off the exchange and into a digital wallet that only you control.
And that's the scary part I've heard about. It involves a private key or a seed phrase. If I lose the keys to that wallet,
it's gone forever. There's no customer support, no forgot password button. Millions, maybe billions of dollars of Bitcoin have been lost because people threw away hard drives or forgot their seed phrase.
So we have a trade-off. The risk of the exchange getting hacked versus the risk of me being an idiot and losing my keys.
Harsh, but accurate. And this is where the expert advice in our text is actually quite pragmatic for beginners. As you say, for your very first small purchase, that learning budget amount, it is perfectly acceptable to leave it on the exchange while you learn.
That's a relief. I don't need to buy a hardware wallet and bury it in the backyard for my $20 of Bitcoin.
Not yet. As your investment grows, say, once it becomes a significant amount of money for you, then your security needs to grow. You graduate to self-custody. But don't let the complexity stop you from making that first small purchase.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener? Let's recap the workflow we've built today based on the sources.
It's a four-step mission. One, the setup. Connect your bank account, not your credit card.
Yeah.
You'll save 3 to 5% in fees. Patience pays.
Two.
The execution.
Right. When you go to buy, try to find the advanced or pro interface. Don't pay the convenience tax. Learn what a limit order is.
Three, the budget. Start with a learning budget of $10 to $50 money you can truly afford to lose. Stick to the blue chips, BTC or ETH, and ignore unit bias.
And four, the mindset.
Treat that money as a sunk cost for your education. Don't panic if it drops.
And don't rush. The sources emphasize that rushing is the cause of almost every mistake, from typing the wrong number to panic selling at the bottom.
Absolutely. The market will still be there tomorrow. The blockchain doesn't sleep, but you should.
Before we sign off, I want to leave you with a thought that came up while we were reading through this. We started with that analogy of the foreign currency exchange at the airport.
Right. You hand over dollars, you get yen.
But think about the last step of that analogy. When you go to Japan, you don't leave your yen at the airport exchange booth and just ask them to hold it for you.
No, of course not.
You put it in your pocket.
Right.
You walk away with it.
That's a very provocative point.
Currently, if you leave your crypto on the exchange, it's like leaving your vacation money at the booth. It's convenient, sure. You don't have to carry a wallet. But at what point does that convenience become a liability? At what point do you stop trusting the booth and start trusting your own pocket?
That is the fundamental question of crypto ownership, self-sovereignty.
Yeah.
And it's one you'll have to answer as your portfolio grows.
Something to mull over before you make that next deposit. Thanks for diving in with us.
See you next time.